Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. This is episode 48. It's titled Your Marriage and Winning the Lottery. This is part one. Again, it's titled Your Marriage and Winning the Lottery. I'm Jonathan Egerich. As always, I'm joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich, and we're so glad that you could be with us this week. I just briefly wanted to mention just an extended thanks to everybody who has been rating us on iTunes. I think we're at 75 reviews right now, 5 stars, and certainly didn't have a goal of reaching 100 in the beginning, but we're close, and I would like to encourage anybody that hasn't been able to do that or has been meaning to do that, if you wouldn't mind going over to iTunes or other places where you can rate the podcast. That would be fantastic. It really helps gain momentum, traction in the rankings in iTunes and other places, you know, including even on the website, loveandrespectpodcast.com, going in and hitting the like button on an episode if it meant something to you. It just signals that people are engaging the material, and we know that you are, but sometimes when you're kind of passively listening there and not liking or rating something, it doesn't indicate to others how much we see that this is impacting via the emails that we get, et cetera. And then, as I mentioned, the rankings in places like iTunes. So thank you for doing that. Thank you to those of you in advance who are yet to do that and will. We appreciate it deeply. If you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's episode, episode 47, that was titled My Love is Behind My Disrespect, a good response on that episode. And so if you've listened to it and want to share it with others, we're always grateful of that. We're nearing 50 episodes, so there is a lot of content to draw upon or share with others, to cherry pick episodes here and there, to go through and listen to them systematically. So lots of ways of going about and doing that. As always, we plan on continuing to do this for the foreseeable future and are excited about doing so. Well, good morning, Dad, and we're going to transition into the topic now, and I'll kind of let you start off.
Well, my question for those listening is this: are you experiencing troubling moments in your marriage and family? Are you experiencing more than moments? It's minutes, maybe it's days, months, years, the wide range of issues. So, but whatever state you're in, I want you to ask that question. You know, are these troubling moments controlling me? How do I interpret them? What am I supposed to do with these? I want to set this up with this set of scriptures. Listen to 2 Corinthians 4:17. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Let me read that again. Listen to it. For momentary light affliction, these troubling moments you're going through, is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Or listen to Romans 8:18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. So here's the deal. He's contrasting what we're going through right now with what's coming. And I want to address that in just a moment. But years ago, as a 10-year-old boy, I answered the phone. And on the other line was the radio station, some radio station in Peoria, Illinois. And they said I was a winner, that I had just won a prize. They were calling various homes, and the person who answered won a prize. And I was the winner, and I was elated. Now, what I won was an African violet plant, and I think it cost more to deliver to the home than the plant. It was just in a small pot, and the plant was miniature, and I think I killed it shortly just because of neglect as a 10-year-old. But apart from the outcome, the moment of winning, I still recall to this day the feelings, the elation that I was special. That, you know, I mean, to that point, I always thought everybody else won. And now I was a winner, and my name was all over Pure Illinois, although no one would have remembered it. But nonetheless, I won. And the feeling of being so special, it just was an emotion that came back to me so many decades later. And so that experience of winning something, and I want each of us to ask ourselves, hey, do we remember a moment when we won something? Can you remember it? And it could be, you know, that you won the door prize. You know, it's those situations where you didn't do anything. It could be that you won the 100-yard dash, or you were selected as first chair of the cello section of the orchestra. I mean, it can be something as a result of your performance. It can just be the result of a random, you know, chance happening kind of an event. But nonetheless, I want you to get in tune with the emotion that you felt, the elation you felt. And Jonathan, do you recall anything similar in your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, an unexpected gift that came my way, a very large financial gift when I was graduating from high school that came from somebody that I would not have expected, had only known a short while, to do. And it was very substantial. And I can just remember thinking, wow, you know, and just and the appreciation, the elation, you know, the realization that this was going to pay for a, you know, a chunk of my, you know, first year of college. And it was incredible. And I guess on a more humorous level, and I don't know if this perfectly captures your example. I know at the conferences at times you give the kind of a Christmas morning example, but there's this commercial out right now, and it's this brother and sister, and they've got some old home footage. I don't know if you've seen it, Dad, where they're sitting on the floor opening presents, and they just go ballistic. They're screaming and insanely with happiness, with joy, and it's uncontainable. And then I don't know if it's the same too, or if they've hired actors all these years later, but it's now the actual product for the commercial. And it's these two adults, brother and sister, screaming elatedly in the same way. And they keep flashing back and forth, you know, 25 years, you know, later, these two little kids and now adults, and they're screaming in the same way with excitement when they're opening something or receiving something. And it's hilarious on one level, but it brings to the sense of this idea of the emotion, was they couldn't contain it, right? It was mm-hmm. such a surprise what they were opening. It was so cool, so I don't know if that helps the example, but there's this idea that there are these moments that we have where just this pure joy, this pure elation, this pure excitement comes up inside of us, and it is a part of the human experience.
Well, and exactly. I think on the one hand, this idea of this, the unspeakable joy in response to receiving something of tremendous value to ourselves. I don't know that commercial. I haven't seen it. They may be setting up to show how childish kids are in their excitement and how childish adults are when they act like kids. I don't know if that's the point. But I think the deeper idea here is that there is a joy when we win something, when we receive something that is of a magnitude to us of great value. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I was thinking of a guy named Harold Diamond. I did some research on the internet, and he won the Mega Millions lottery in the state of New York, and he won, Jonathan, $326 million. Mm-hmm. There have been higher purses, but he's one of the individuals, you know, sometimes those are split among three people or whatever, but he clearly ranks as one of the highest individual winners. I mean, it's mind-boggling to think about $326 million. I mean, you can't wrap your brain around this. And I was thinking of individuals who live every day taking a portion of their income and going down to some, you know, gas station or whatever and buying their tickets. And they're living always with this feeling that I'm going to win the big one and I'm going to have this worry-free life. And when I win the big one, they can take this job and shuffle it to someone else. there is this inner dream and fantasy. And yet, you know, you look at it and they're living their whole world, their whole life around this idea that they're going to win something on the planet here that's going to make their life free. And then they're going to die, you know? And it's kind of like, you know, but that's the way they live. Then there's another group of people that are very cynical about all of this because they say, for me to win the Powerball kind of thing, it's more likely I'm going to get hit by lightning two times in the same place than to win that. I think statisticians have described that. So the issue of probability is such that, you know, you could die from lightning a couple times before you're going to, you know, obviously win something. But now the question is, why do I bring this up? Why am I saying this? Well, some dream of an earthly paradise, which will never be, and others reject the glories as so improbable that it borders on the impossible, and so they don't entertain even this. It's fairy tale stuff to them. But I bring this up because as a Christ follower, a moment awaits us in heaven that exceeds anything that we can imagine. And that's what Paul was talking about. There is a weight of glory that doesn't compare, that there is something coming that is beyond us. It's mind-boggling. In fact, the Apostle Paul, Jonathan, talks about the fact in 2 Corinthians 12, where a man was caught up into the third heavens 14 years earlier, and then he identifies that man as himself. And he says in 2 Corinthians 12:4 that he was caught up into paradise, quote, caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, inexpressible words. In other words, it's beyond the ability of language to convey what it was that he saw. I love it, inexpressible words. What he envisioned, and some have said that God intends for us not to know what's coming because there'd be a lot of holy suicides if we really knew. Because we'd be so melancholy with what we're experiencing here and what we know awaits us that we would get depressed. In fact, Paul goes on in that verse to say, which a man is not permitted to speak. So he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which a man is not permitted to speak. And by way of historical context, Paul is being clear with us. The Lord told him, Paul, first of all, you just seen things that words can't even capture. But here's the deal. If you try to say what you saw, we're going to tell you not to do that. We're not going to give you permission to do that. And in fact, to remind you not to tell the church of what's coming, we're going to give you a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet your body. And a lot of people say, my great aunt is my thorn in the flesh. I suppose she is. But the original intent is from Paul, who says that was a messenger of Satan to buffet my body, to prevent me from boasting about the revelations. In other words, not to boast to the church about what is to come. What awaits us is absolutely mind-boggling. So is that point clear so far, Jonathan, what I'm leading up to? Are you following me, tracking me, with me?
Yeah, it is. You know, it is to me. And you know, oftentimes, you know, I think that you're gauging, you know, my response to it in the same way that, you know, we're not spending, you know, 3 days, you know, going over this podcast episode in each point. And so I'm hearing some of this for the first time, and I'm learning as you talk, and it clearly makes you know, sense to me, that, you know, when we think about earthly rewards, when we think about earthly incentives, when we think about earthly gifts, right? I mean, we can experience lots of pleasure in this life. And as you indicated, you know, there's cynics who, you know, just, you know, kind of dismiss, you know, even in this life, these types of things, and they just kind of trudge through life, not even capturing, you know, some of the joy and happiness that we can experience here. But there is something coming, that we are, you know, have no idea what it is. And I think that where it's always been a difficulty, and maybe you're going to, you know, capture, you know, some of this. I mean, how do I stay mindful of this? I so often do not think about this at all. And would it impact me if I, you know, if I did, right? I mean, so I'll stop there, but that's often, you know, as I, you know, and, you know, we've talked before. I mean, when I was a little boy, right? I mean, at 6, 7, you know, come in and lay next to the, you know, your guy's bed in the night, because I was having, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around some of these things, right? And mm-hmm. in a childlike way. But even as adults, I think sometimes we maybe don't go there because we can't wrap our head around them, but in another way, we should be going there, even though there are inexpressible things, even though there are things we can't know, even though we're kind of seeing dimly, right? If we do go there, and I think that hopefully that's what you're going to attempt to do, we kind of need to go there. We need to imagine this. We need to think about it. It can impact our lives now.
Well, and that's the point of Paul's points that he was making that I quoted up front. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. Or he says in 8:18 of Romans, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. And to your point, you know, I wish I thought about this moment by moment. I wish I could grasp this. I wish I could comprehend this, but we can't because it's inexpressible. And even if we could understand it, Paul wasn't permitted to tell us. So we're left in the dark a little bit. There is this, we see through a mirror dimly, so to speak, and we must walk by faith, not by sight. And yet at the same time, there are those of us who, when we do think about it, have this idea that we're going to be on a white cloud with a harp and singing, you know, church chorus numbers. And even in your case, you struggled with the idea that you're going to live on forever. And as a little boy, what am I going to do forever? I mean, there was this desire for cessation of existence rather than this idea that I'm going to live eternally, kind of just twiddling my thumbs forever. I mean, talk about the epitome of boredom. And you were frightened as a little boy because you couldn't grasp that. And so what we have to do is we have to just trust here that God knows what he's doing and maybe step back for a moment. I mean, he's given us this creation, and all of us have this moment of a sunset or the looking of a flower or the birth of a baby. I mean, there are very few atheistic mothers. I mean, after the birth, they just sense, how did this come about in 9 months? There's a sense of a miracle here. I mean, eyes, ears, seeing, and still today we have so many things. We don't know how we see. We don't, the human gait, the way in which we walk. I mean, the phenomena, but we're too familiar with it, and familiarity can breed indifference. But nonetheless, the point I'm making is we've all had these moments of the Great Canyon. We're looking out and we see something beyond this. And the majesty of this and just the wonder of this, it's just glorious. And so we have these glimpses. I was even talking to Joy, your sister, about the fact that God designed us to celebrate. Because I was saying, you know, you go to these rock concerts and everybody's jumping and everybody's glorying and all these rock stars. And I said, God designed us to celebrate. He designed us to worship, but you can either do it correctly or not. But it's like the Super Bowl team that wins, and you're a fan of the Super Bowl team, and the winning touchdown in the last 30 seconds, and I mean, everybody goes crazy. We were designed to experience that. These are those moments, those glimpses. Now, it can all be misdirected, but it allows us to see that we have within our human spirit this longing to enter into glory, enter into a celebration. The problem on earth is all glory is fleeting. You know, the great, in the Roman tradition, when a Roman general would come back the great victor, they would parade him through the streets for all the crowds to cheer him, but they would have a slave standing behind him, holding the crown over his head, whispering into his ears as the crowds were cheering, "All glory is fleeting, all glory is fleeting." So the earthly $326 million that this Harold Diamond won, it's gonna not be his. He can't, there's no hearse behind, you know, there's no, you know, trailer behind a hearse that, you know, with all your goods, it ends. You come into the world naked, you're going to leave naked. But does that mean that life is too bad to be true, that death ends all? Or are all these moments designed by God to let us know that something's coming and he's calling us to trust him so that in this marriage right now where you're having difficulty, it doesn't compare with the glory that's coming? And one of the things that's going to enable you to endure that is to realize your marriage is not too bad to be true. Your family's not too bad to be true. That all of this God is using, even though the people in your life are not responding to you, nothing you do is wasted. And this is important because as Jesus Christ was caught up into glory, in 1 Timothy 3:16, he was taken up into glory. Peter says in 1 Peter 5:1 that you and I are going to, he says, glory is to be revealed to us. Glory is to be revealed. We don't know what's going to be revealed, but something's coming. And then he says, Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 2:14, that we will gain the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. As Christ, received glory, was taken up into glory, you and I are going to gain the very glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. But here it is. This is inexpressible, Jonathan. There is nothing that we can say that's going to capture what's coming. So in a sense, in humility, by childlike faith, we've got to think about this. But what I challenge in our rewarded cycle, we have these three cycles that they can listen to in the early part of our podcast. One of the things we talk about is ultimately, I love Sarah unto Jesus Christ. I have this heavenly perspective that I do what I do not because of Sarah, but because of the glory that is coming. I want to please Christ. I want to do this unto Christ. You know, Sam Mosier, who is head of Nickelodeon, said to me, "Wow, it's not about my wife and me. It's about Christ and me, isn't it?" This was a huge revelation to him, as it has been for many of us. We even did this recent post that we do what we do unto Jesus Christ, who's beyond the shoulder of our spouse. And I'm always amazed at the response. People go, "Wowzer, that's deep. Cold chills. You mean it's not about my spouse, it's about Christ?" Yes, having that heavenly perspective. And what encourages me, Jonathan, is the extent to which the believers who follow us, the over a million that are following us on Facebook, are deep. They really do listen to what we're saying. And suddenly it's like, you know what? I don't have to sweat the small stuff here. Yeah, this spouse irritates me. Yes, this child irritates me. Yes, I'm bothered. And I'm not even going to think of Jesus today necessarily. But in the overall marathon of this marriage, over the marathon of this parenting episode, I'm going to see the glory that comes. And this momentary light affliction is producing in me an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. And why does Paul say beyond all comparison? I don't have the words to say it. It's inexpressible. Or I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. But again, why? Compare it. He said, I can't capture for you what's coming. So that means that what you're doing right now is not wasted. And it matters. But what we're going to do is have a second part to this, because here's where we're going to go with this eventually, that I want everyone to understand that there is this eternal realm coming, and there is something coming, a reward coming. However, it's very important that we hear what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 3, 14 and 15. He said, for every man's work, which he has built upon it, meaning the foundation of Jesus Christ, if that work remains, he will receive a reward. He will receive a reward, and it's going to be far more than monetary value, but the joy that we're going to have, the value is going to be worth more than $326 million. It's going to be greater than an African violet, that there is this reward coming. But he goes on to say in the next verse, if any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved. Now, what's he saying? There are rewarded believers, and there are unrewarded believers. There are some that are going to win the lotto, so to speak, and there are some that aren't. Now, here's the mystery. We don't know what this looks like. What does it mean to be in heaven as an unrewarded believer versus being in heaven as a rewarded believer? But 1 Corinthians 3, 14, and 15 is clearly teaching this, that even though some of us are going to be saved, the work, everything we did is wood, hay, and stubble, which is what he's talked about earlier, versus gold, silver, and precious stones. In other words, there's going to be a testing by fire. And gold, silver, and precious stones do not get consumed, but wood, hay, and straw is burned up. In other words, if I'm living my whole life bitter toward my spouse, hating my wife, having contempt for my husband, resenting my kids, being this ugly individual all my life, I myself may be saved. My spirit will be with God forever, but I'm going to come to that moment before Christ when he will not say to me, well done. In fact, Paul said about one believer, he handed his body over to Satan to be destroyed so that his spirit would be saved, that you can live your whole life and it's a waste. You never are going to be a winner. Now, heaven is a free gift. You can't earn heaven. It's eternal life is a free gift. Christ died. He paid the penalty for us. That's a free gift. But once in heaven, there's this attaboy, attagirl. There's this add-on that the Lord wants to give to us. And some of us are going to receive a reward that's so mind-boggling that you can't even put your brain around this. But John said in 2 John 1:8 that he said, be very important that you don't lose what we've gained, that you receive a full reward. In other words, some people can be faithful for 30 years. They've kind of maximized the reward, but then in the last years of their life, they deny Christ, they live in disobedience, and they lose what they had gained. This is serious stuff, but we don't know how to describe it in depth. We just simply don't know what this looks like. You're not going to be envious in heaven because we're going to be holy and perfectly. So it's difficult for me to put my brain around, but I just say to people, don't mess with this. And here's what I want you to know. Your faithfulness right now to Christ, for some of you, you're going to receive a well done, enter the joy of my master. It's going to exceed anything that a lotto winner has ever won. It's not going to be monetary. You're going to enter a glory in Christ Jesus himself, and there's going to be a celebration. It is so beyond anything you can imagine. And all you have to do is be a faithful Christ follower this day, even though your spouse and your children are not responding. It doesn't even compare with what is coming. And the question on the table is, does that give you hope? Does it give you perspective? Jonathan, does this make sense?
It does. And obviously I've heard parts of this, before. And I guess I was, thinking of this imagery that you've created in the rewarded cycle. And you mentioned here with Christ over, our shoulder, but also kind of thinking of this reward, coming in heaven. I mean, are we viewing this as some sort of incentive? I mean, how help me wrap my head around that. I'm imagining Christ over my shoulder. I'm thinking of this next life and what's coming, and it's motivating me. It's incentive to do the right thing. Help me unpack that maybe a little bit more.
No, that's an excellent question, and it apparently the Lord, you know, is people have said, you know, Jesus, Revelation said when Christ returns, he will come with his reward. You know, and I've had people say to me, you know, well, I should just do what I do without any thought of reward. And I said, look, if the Son of God says that he's going to reward you, I suggest to you, you back off. You know, but the question you're asking is, should this be an incentive to us? Is it kind of a,
is it legalistic even? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So ultimately, we have to see this in terms of relationship, that we are touching the heart of Christ. We're bringing him pleasure. That in some ways it's contingent on the joy that we have in our relationship with him. If it's purely seen as he's this cosmic killjoy out there who's watching with a magnifying glass and is intending to smack us from heaven every time we do something wrong, then we've got a wrong image of the Christ who died on the cross for us. But if we see the epitome of love, that he is the one who loves us, died for us, and that he wants to honor us. He wants to reward us for our sufferings and difficulties. That when we enter into this, he doesn't want us to be bitter or resentful, but he wants us to give this over to him and actually thank him for that difficulty, and that nothing we do in the midst of that is wasted, and that he is saying to us, in effect, you know what? I'm not going to overlook this. Heaven is a free gift. But because of your faithfulness to me and the way you've touched my heart, the way that I have been pleased with you, I'm going to honor you. Well done, good and faithful parent. Mm-hmm. Well done, good and faithful spouse. You are faithful in these little things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Enter the joy of your master. And when we turn and enter into that, we're going to see something, the celebration, that moment, the joy. I mean, it's beyond, but it's inexpressible words right now. We don't know. But the question is, do we really believe this? And one of the things you're saying is, you know, if we don't ever think about this, then are we true believers? If this doesn't affect the way we live, are we true believers? I mean, what does it mean to be a believer? A believer is one who realizes this world is not an end in itself, that Jesus Christ said, I go to prepare a place for you. If that's not so, I would have told you. So he's in eternity, preparing a place for us. He's in glory. We're going to receive the glory that he received. We're going to receive the inheritance that he's received. I'm at a loss to know what all to say other than if you are suffering, it's not a wasted thing. Don't shake your fist at heaven, but rather see your opportunity here to go through this so that this is going to lead to a greater reward.
And I mean, does this turn the phrase, some people are so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, on its head, meaning more of us need to be more heavenly minded so that we are earthly good?
Absolutely. I haven't met very many people who are so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good, because when you really are heavenly minded, you are you're going to do the way of Christ. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. When you have an idea of what his will is in heaven, you're going to do this here. You're going to serve people. You're going to love people. You're going to forgive people. You're going to give to people. I mean, but yeah, we've seen people who are overly religious, and they're superficial in their religiosity, and they're very judgmental, and they turn us off. They have their 15-pound Bible, and they're pointing a finger at us.
Sure.
But that image is really less and less. Still like to create that caricature, but it's not out there as it used to be.
Sure. But I was thinking even of a C.S. Lewis quote that I was looking up as we were talking about this here at the end, and he says, if you read history, you will find that the Christians who did most for the present world, or who did most in the present world, were precisely those who thought most of the next. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they have become so ineffective in this world.
Yes. No, I mean, that's powerful.
And so, Go ahead. And so, you know, I mean, just this idea that, you know, am I thinking of Christ over my spouse's shoulder? Am I thinking of this reward? Am I thinking of, even after I become a Christ follower and heaven is assured, salvation is assured, that what I do, you know, still matters? I mean, could it radically, you know, change our lives? And this may be for another podcast at some time, but, you know, whether it's about how do we enter into spiritual disciplines, right? You know, quiet time. I mean, how do we maintain this heavenly mindedness, right? That helps us do, you know, earthly good, that helps us parent correctly, that helps us, in our marriage, in better ways, because it does provide this incentive. It does provide this anticipation of, you know, well done, you know, good and faithful servant, or attaboy, attagirl, right? But I'll let you kind of wrap up today's episode.
One of the things that I say, God is not punitive in that sense, and so it's all positive. So everything, sometimes we have this mindset, if I yell at my kids, I'm going to, be punished. Yeah, there's a discipline, but the Lord's approach to us is much more positive. He's always inviting us to do something positive and even come back and seek forgiveness, which is positive. There is a loss of reward, and I'm not quite sure what John Wall was meaning there. So I'm not going to diminish the fact that there is subtraction, but there is this greater teaching on addition, and that it's kind of like just keep moving forward, and every time you do something positive, there's going to be a cha-ching, and just keep looking at it more positively. But words cheapen the reality, and that's why I struggle sometimes, because even the idea of cha-ching, suggests some kind of a, Las Vegas slot machine, and we want to make sure that we don't mislead that. Mm-hmm. But I think even C.S. Lewis, you're referencing him, for the idea of a young schoolboy, he said, it's kind of like the day before summer vacation, and he's sitting in class, and he has joy in anticipation of the joy that's about to come. Mm-hmm. And he lives in that moment of joy. And all of us who remember the day before summer school, there's this incredible joy. Well, in some ways, that imagery captures what I'm trying to say, that there should be a sense of joy, a sense of celebration right now in anticipation of what is coming, and that I am heavenly minded here, and therefore I am of earthly good. There is this faith venture here. And yet, I think these illustrations where, someone is just wallowing in mud and they're eating just, dirt and mud and so on and so forth, and someone tries to tell them that just beyond this wall is an oasis and is food and is cleanliness and is sunshine, and they're in this mud and dark and so on and so forth, and they simply don't believe it. They don't believe it. And they continue to just live in this depressed, muddy state because they don't believe that there is this moment that they could get up and walk over the hill and see all of that. And so they continue to be in depression and hatred because they have no idea and they really don't want to know. And so you and I who are experiencing these down moments in relationship to our family, we're feeling like we're in the mud, we're in the mire, that it's depressing, it's dark. One of the things that you need to do is realize there is a day coming. And in the midst of your situation now, you can actually have a sense of joy. Even though the mud is still on you, you can have a sense of excitement that there is this coming. Now, the question is this just some trick that the apostles and Jesus are playing on us? It's a psychomatic thing to just make us nice, or is this true truth? And I came to a point where I believe this is true truth, and therefore everything I do in relationship to Sarah, everything I do in relationship to Jonathan, Joy, David, it counts. No matter who they are, who they fail to be, God is watching me, and He wants to say at some point, attaboy, mm-hmm. attaboy, here's what I have for you.
Well, we're so glad that you could join us this week. I hope you enjoy listening to my dad talk about some of these things that I think transition back to when he was a pastor for 18 years. I know I always enjoyed sitting there listening to his sermons each week, and I enjoy these ones where it feels more like a sermon, Dad, whether you intended that or not, that you take us through something from point A to point whatever and the applicable scriptures. Not that we don't do that with the consistent marriage messages on these specific topics, but thank you for that message, and I hope it was meaningful to others out there today. Part one or part two will be coming at some point, whether that's next week or in the near future, but stay tuned for that. And please, again, as always, share this episode with others. We are so grateful for you doing that. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect Podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.